Tuesday's state Supreme Court election between conservative-backed candidate Daniel Kelly and liberal-backed candidate Janet Protasiewicz is the most expensive race of its type in U.S. history. Gained that title last month, according to the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, the candidates have raised a combined $39 million. Ads backing Protasiewicz dominated the field for a few weeks, but now pro-Kelly ads have apparently taken the lead. Outside from groups from around the country are also getting involved in the race, which could swing the ideological balance of the court in favor of liberals for the first time since 2008. We're talking about the money and the messaging in the final days before the election. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about the amount of money and out-of-state attention that the race is getting? It's an officially nonpartisan race. Does it feel nonpartisan to you, or do you treat it like any other partisan election? Are you seeing ads on TV, on streaming, online? Are they negative, missing the mark on the issues you care about? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Christina LaPlante is an assistant professor of political science and public administration at UW-La Crosse. Christina, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Big, expensive state Supreme Court race. Can you give us the basics on what is bringing so much cash into this campaign?
Well, yeah, my goodness, as you had just noted, as of last month, right, just shy of $40 million, becoming the most expensive court race in United States history. And that's all for a good reason. I think that there's three big takeaways here about why this race is attracting so much attention. So first, obviously, we got to talk about the balance of power. The winner of this race is going to determine the ideological composition of the court, which currently has a 4-3 conservative majority, and Protasiewicz, which could very much be the changing factor there, as you noted, having a liberal majority for the first time since 2008. Of course, on the other hand, we've got the issue of abortion. The overturning of Roe versus Wade apparently remains a central policy focus for Democrats, especially with the 1849 Wisconsin law that makes it a felony to provide abortions. And, you know, with what we've got Josh Call, the attorney general, doing, we very much should expect to see some type of abortion case before the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So you've got a lot of energy and a lot of enthusiasm there. You've got gerrymandering, right? What are we going to do about the gerrymandered maps in the state of Wisconsin? And then you've got national implications, which I think is why you're seeing so much outside spending, you know, large individual donors from other states, national policy organizations. You know, don't forget that in 2020, it was the Wisconsin Supreme Court that narrowly voted just by 4-3 to block an attempt by Trump allies to throw out a couple hundred thousand ballots in those liberal-leaning counties. So there is a lot of work for the Supreme Court to do. And I feel like I'm just kind of skimming the surface of why this race is getting so much attention.
Right. And on a dollar per vote ratio, this is going to be really high. These are spring elections, traditionally not high turnout. The primary had about 20%, which doesn't sound high, but by Supreme Court spring election standards, really pretty high compared to, you know, even some final Supreme Court elections in the state. That said, it isn't going to look like turnout for a presidential or a Senate or governor election. What do you see when it comes to money versus turnout in this race?
Well, yeah, 20% certainly does sound small, but in the context of how these elections normally go, I think on average it's been, you know, anywhere from 10 to 15% turnout over the last decade or so, just talking about kind of, you know, Wisconsin special elections, especially court elections. But, you know, that's nothing to blush about, this 20%. Moreover, you know, like you said, we've got high turnout, you know, about 60% for our presidential elections, 40% for midterms, and then all of our special elections, you know, you're really lucky to get a fifth of voters turning out there. But not only are we seeing turnout consistently increasing, but who is increasing is equally important. You know, there's a reason that majority of these ads are airing on Facebook and Instagram. They, you know, especially the Protasiewicz campaign, right? They want to hit that younger Gen Z voter. They want them to see these advertisements and they want them to turn out. And I fully expect turnout to be on par, if not higher, on April 4th.
Now, one thing that makes it hard in the journalism world to talk about these elections is they're nonpartisan elections. So there's this sort of elaborate facade of a nonpartisan election. And yet one candidate is nonpartisan, but all the Democratic funding goes to them. And another candidate's nonpartisan and all the Republican funding, and I'm talking parties and groups, special interest groups and so on, goes to that candidate. Can you talk about the sort of air quotes we could throw around nonpartisan here?
Yeah, it certainly doesn't feel like a nonpartisan contest, does it? And I think I just read not too long ago that the Democratic Party of Wisconsin is officially Protasiewicz's largest donor. So, and moreover, when we look at the types of policy organizations, you know, pro-choice versus pro-life, many of those organizations are throwing money at their respective candidates on either side of this line. So I think we have to really sit and think about you know, the purpose of a nonpartisan contest, what role the judiciary plays in our government and our institutions, and we seem to be very clearly deviating from that. I don't think you could find a single Wisconsin voter who would agree with the fact that, yeah, this very much seems like a nonpartisan contest to me.
Talking to Christina Plant, Assistant Professor of Political Science at UW-La Crosse, looking at big, big money in Wisconsin State Supreme Court race, breaking a national record for state Supreme Court races. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Jed is with us in Lacouture. Jed, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up?
Oh, just a few things. I'm just kind of bummed out with the larger system, not only the specific election, either for Supreme Court in Wisconsin or the recent Senate race in Georgia. It's like, seems like you got to pay to play so that people are buying elections, they're buying politicians, they're buying policy. And it just seems like a lose-lose situation to me. And it's not the lesser of two losers or the lesser of two evils. It's still a loser and it's still evil. It's like putting gas in a broken car. It's just a bummer. It's not merit-based. Perhaps we should have an electoral system and no money at all.
Jed, thanks a lot for the call. Christina, I think Jed, not alone, feeling disillusioned with the amount of money that goes into politics, and him saying you got to pay to play in the political game.
Yeah, and what an exceptionally frustrating sentiment to feel about one's own democracy, and certainly shared with millions of Americans. And races didn't always used to be like this, especially nonpartisan races. It wasn't until 2008 and the Citizens United court case ruling, where now, as long as outside groups aren't directly coordinating with campaigns, they can basically spend unlimited amounts of money, you know, for influencing elections, right? There's no other way around that. That's what they're doing. And absolutely, right? How do we get out of this? How do we get out of this hole? You know, we need real campaign finance reform. You know, that's really the only way that we can start rebuilding the reputation and legitimacy of our political institutions, and you know, not falling victim to this belief that very, you know, frequently accurate belief that our politicians are bought.
Thanks a lot for that call, Jed, at 800-642-1234. Nate joins us now in Milwaukee. Nate, hello.
Hi, thanks for having me. The big concern I have is that the gerrymandering means we don't have a legislature that represents us. And as a citizen, one of the things we go to the legal system for is to protect our rights. And part of those rights is to have legislature that represents us. So anybody that says this should be discussed in the legislature, well, we need to actually have a legislature that works for that to happen. Something that a previous caller mentioned about money in politics sparked a memory, in that Wisconsin used to have public funding for elections. So that's something that we could actually potentially return to help deal with this problem. And a small thing that hasn't made any of the press so far is the Milwaukee Bar Association did its qualified, not qualified recommendations for anybody running for judge statewide or in this area. a lot more of them actually ended up saying Kelly was not qualified than Protasiewicz. So I thought that was and these are people who have voted qualified for people that were appointed by Republicans. So I think that's actually a little less partisan thing to go by.
Nate, thanks a lot for the call. To Nate's first point, Christina, you mentioned redistricting, the way our political lines are drawn in Wisconsin. This has come up a lot as a likely case that could end up coming before the state Supreme Court over the next year or two. How have you heard that talked about in the race?
Well, yeah, first of all, a lot of excellent points brought up just then. But I think what all of these really excellent questions and comments are getting at is that there is severe disillusionment in this country about any branch of government's ability to be impartial, any ability to write and pass and execute laws in a way that benefits society as a whole, rather than just some specific narrow partisan agenda. So obviously in the state of Wisconsin, we look to the state legislature to redraw these district boundaries. However, we, you know, perceive that through a partisan lens. There is the gerrymandering problem. Well, let's look to the courts to fix that. Well, now, you know, even though we ought to have these nonpartisan races, which they're very clearly not partisan, even our courts, right, the one institution supposed to be impartial, is also falling victim to this partisan problem. I think what I hope a lot of people kind of take away from this who are feeling this way is recognizing that there are options and that change is possible. There's other states that are doing things in different ways that help kind of remove this partisan shadow from democratic processes. You know, maybe some movement or momentum for independent commissions. I think California, a handful of other states have independent commissions where they're responsible for redrawing these district lines. So if we can't trust politicians to do their job in an unbiased fashion, maybe we should start considering taking away some of those responsibilities.
Thanks for that call, Nate. We're talking to UW La Crosse political science professor Christina LaPlante about the money going into the race for the state Supreme Court and the issues the two candidates are focusing on in their ads. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you seeing a lot of ads on social media, on streaming, on broadcast TV, on the radio, you name it? What do you think? Does it leave you feeling motivated, burnt out? Do you think we need to change the rules after all this money goes into this one state Supreme Court seat race? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk with Christina LaPlante, assistant professor of political science at UW La Crosse. We're looking at the record-setting amount of money that's gone into the race for an open seat on our state Supreme Court, what the campaigns are doing with that money in their ads on TV and social media. Still time for you to join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Christina, let's talk about the messaging now. Let's start with the Kelly campaign and groups backing him. What are you seeing when it comes to the messaging on that side of the race?
One thing that has really stood out to me is the co-opting of Trump-style messaging that we're seeing coming from the Kelly campaign. You know, Trump loves his nicknames, Ron D. Sanctimonious, Sleepy Joe Biden. I love the No Jail Janet that the Kelly campaign has been using to refer to Protasiewicz, really using a lot of, in my opinion, some Willie Horton style advertising from the 88 contest between Bush and Dukakis, where during Dukakis's time as Massachusetts governor, he had this furlough program for inmates and, you know, this notorious case of Willie Horton, who committed several crimes while on furlough, making it is eerily similar. Like, go watch that advertisement, watch the Willie Horton advertisement and compare it to some of these No Jail Janet advertisements from the Kelly campaign. They are eerily similar. But this idea of, you know, Democrats are too soft on crime, They don't have what it takes to make the tough decisions to, you know, lead or act effectively. I think that's one of the biggest things that I'm seeing that probably has the greatest potential to resonate with potential voters on a variety of levels.
Now, the soft on crime ads in Wisconsin's state Supreme Court are pretty common. One thing that the state Supreme Court really doesn't do is hear criminal trials directly. Like, they might get an obscure technicality that percolates up from the court. Basically, if you're arrested in Wisconsin, you're probably not going to end up before the state Supreme Court. So it's interesting that keeps getting focused on so much year after year in these races.
Of course, and maybe we're hearing about the constitutionality of some type of tough on crime law that might go before the Supreme Court. But by and large, you're right. I mean, criminal cases often aren't heard at the Supreme Court. And that's just further evidence that voters should be picking up on that we have very much deviated from a nonpartisan contest in both camps. I think both candidates are guilty of this, of playing on to, you know, very political stereotypes about liberalism and conservatism that are really just being used as part of this numbers game. What's the scariest, biggest message I can deliver to voters to make sure that they're turning out on April 4th?
And then the same question, the Protasiewicz campaign itself and supporters, what are the main lines of messaging there?
I would say the biggest one has to be abortion access. I think you have Democratic strategists who saw how wildly successful that messaging was in the 2022 midterms, how there was not this red wave of Republicans taking Congress. And I think Democrats attributed a lot of that to mobilization and energy and enthusiasm about, well, kind of negatively, right, about the Dobbs decision. And this is what happens when we don't participate in politics, right? We've got to get out there. We've got to fight for our rights. And out of all of the advertisements that I have seen, besides the rather silly advertisement from Protasiewicz about how to pronounce her name, which reminded me a lot of the Lisa Murkowski advertisement when she was a write-in candidate, besides that, it overwhelmingly seems to me fear-based messages from the Protasiewicz campaign about what's going to happen to women's rights and their ability to choose if she's not elected.
Let's go back to our callers with Mary on the line in Milwaukee. Mary, hello.
Hi there. So I'm thinking that I don't like any of the ads at all from either candidate, partly because it's such an assault. If you watch the morning news on any channel, it's like one string-pulling, abusive commercial after another. They're terribly manipulative. And although I'm pro-choice, my other point is I feel like Judge Protasiewicz is not doing anything beyond demonstrating that she is in favor of protecting the rights of childbearing age women. And as far as I can tell from the ads, it's white women at that. I mean, I'm not hearing any desire to reach out beyond the choir.
Mary, thanks a lot for the call. A couple of big points there, Christina, the like incessant negative stream of ads out there that Mary's seeing can bring a person down. Maybe another way to disillusion people about politics.
Yeah, there's absolutely a tipping point when it comes to how negative can a campaign be before it starts demobilizing voters. I think one thing that's happening now is that with all of the contention and the polarization and I think one of the central things happening right now in American politics is this concept of morality politics. In other words, there's a right way to live and there's a wrong way to live. And we're very much developing this conservative morality policy and this liberal morality policy that liberals have a correct way of living. And that is the absolute opposite of what a conservative perceives to be the right way of living. And with that kind of social undercurrent, I think that empowers candidates more to go negative, to take the fear message, to take the anger message, because they can kind of get away with it a little bit more. And more to the point of who do you see represented in these advertisements? Again, you put these two cues together and you know exactly who's being marketed to, right? I think it's overwhelmingly for Democrats, the youth vote, wanting to scare Gen Z and younger voters and maybe even millennials into participating. You will lose your rights if you do not participate. And then conservatives, on the other hand, you know, taking the classic crime frame that if we have a government run by liberals, we'll just have criminals running in the street.
Time for one more caller. Leo is with us in Milwaukee. Leo, hello.
Hey, I first got the vote in 1970, at which time there was only three networks, of course, and there was very few political ads, and they generally focused on issues. Today, I have to say my opinion of the political process is the great spinning mud machine. You take items out of context that look bad, spin it around, make it look as bad as possible, and throw it on the air. As far as the Supreme Court race goes, I have seen exactly one positive ad. Wow. That's not slinging mud at the other side, and it was a Protasiewicz ad.
Leo, thanks for the call. Christina, a great spinning mud machine.
I am definitely going to start using that terminology in my campaigns and elections course. I hope that's okay. I love that phrase. But I think that this all just boils down to the fact that we've kind of lost touch with, I think politicians have really lost touch and how they can effectively communicate with voters. And there's really far less emphasis on issues these days. And it really is all about that emotional appeal. And despite, you know, decades of public opinion survey where people say election year after election year, I hate it. I hate how negative these campaigns are. I can't stand the advertising. But it doesn't change. Politicians still spend, or candidates rather, overwhelming percentages of their budget go just to advertisements. And they're exactly that emotional disposition that we all agree we dislike. But why do they keep doing it? Unfortunately, the answer is they work.
Thanks for that call. And Christina, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
That's Christina LaPlante, Assistant Professor of Political Science and Public Administration at UW-La Crosse. She is with us to talk about the final days of campaigning in the race for state Supreme Court. That race has brought in almost $40 million to the candidates, making it the most expensive state Supreme Court race in U.S. history.